ప్రేమస్వరూపులారా.
ఎంబాడిమెంట్స్ ఆఫ్ లవ్.
శాంతి నీ లోపల ఉన్నది కానీ బయట లేదు.
పీస్ ఇస్ విదిన్ నాట్ అవుట్ సైడ్.
అవుట్ సైడ్ నో పీస్ ఓన్లీ పీసెస్.
Dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashanthi Nilayam, the most happening place on the planet. And welcome once again to Outside Inside, Deep Inside. This month of May is very significant in the history of the Sri Satya Sai Avatar. We often associate November as the most important month when it comes to the Satya Sai incarnation. And rightfully so. November is the month when the whole world joins in rejoicing at the advent of this beautiful form, Sri Satya Sai. And this year, November 23rd, 2020, we will be celebrating the 95th birthday of the Avatar. In fact, we released a logo on the New Year Day on January 1st, 2020 and also offered the theme music for this year. A beautiful rendition and visual of Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu, which was played in the Sai Kulwant Hall on the New Year Day and also released on the Radio Sai website and our social media platforms. That is the theme of this year. Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu. Let everyone everywhere be happy, be safe, be protected. When you think about it, it is so much His grace that even before we had any knowledge of the impending health crisis because of the coronavirus, in this year, Bhagwan had inspired all of us to come up with a theme that would be where we would be praying for the welfare of entire humanity. And that is the theme of the 95th birthday year. It can be only the grace of Bhagwan, the inspiration from Bhagwan and the direction that He was giving that this became the theme unconsciously. But as they say, it happened because of the Sai consciousness which all of us are filled with. And it's really so apt and so timely, and perhaps there could not have been a better theme for this year. This is the year we have to keep praying for every person on the planet, no matter what is their color, what is their financial status, what is their culture. Everyone needs our prayers. Everyone is looking for solace, support, help. And Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu is only about this. That's powerful, isn't it? So, this is historic year of Bhagwan's 95th birthday, and I was telling you how the month of November is so important in the Satya Sai calendar. After November, the next month that comes to mind when it relates to the life story of Sri Satya Sai Avatar, it is the month of October when we celebrate how for the first time the Avatar gave his message to mankind by singing the bhajan Manasa Bhajare Guru Charanam. We celebrate the Avatar Declaration Day on October 20th. We contemplate on how Bhagwan sat on the rock and amidst the few eager enthusiasts around him who had developed a little faith, Bhagwan sat on that rock for 3 days and started his first teaching, his first direction, his first advice to all of us, Manasa Bhajare Guru Charanam. This happened in the month of October. But one of the most historic moments of the Satya Sai saga happened in the month of May 1940. And this is not widely known and celebrated, but this is indeed very significant. It was an epoch-making event that happened on May 23rd, 1940, after the scorpion bite incident, which many of us probably are familiar with if we have been following the series Satya to Sai, which we have had on Radio Sai, and also if you have read Bhagwan's life, if you have read Satyam Shivam Sundaram, or watched the beautiful pictorial series that we did on Bhagwan's life a few years ago on Radio Sai. So after the scorpion bite incident, we know how Satya's behavior had become very strange and no one was able to understand why Satya becomes quiet, why suddenly he says some things which no one can understand, why sometimes he just does not want to eat anything, why sometimes he just wants to be aloof, and sometimes he says things which are completely abracadabra for everyone. And it is at this time that P.T. Krishnamachari came to see Satya. He was a very learned lawyer and he came from Penukonda. He came to investigate, and Pedda Venkappa Raju, Satya's father, Bhagwan's father, was very happy that such a distinguished person was coming to see Satya and probably he will give a solution. And after seeing the situation, P.T. Krishnamachari gave his verdict as, there is a demon that has entered this boy. And this demon is not an ordinary demon. It is extraordinarily powerful. You cannot easily drive this demon away. Human exorcists cannot help. Even gods will not be able to do much because this demon is very, very ferocious. So you need a god who is even more ferocious. You need God Narasimha. You need that half lion, half man god. Only with the grace of God Narasimha, you will be able to frighten the demon out of Satya's body. Only then Satya will become free. So this is what P.T. Krishnamachari, the lawyer, told Pedda Venkappa Raju, and then he added, but you cannot just take him to any Narasimha temple. You have to take him to the big Narasimha Swami temple, which is there in Ghatikachalam. In Ghatikachalam, hundreds of cases have been cured by the grace of this fearsome god, Narasimha. And when Pedda Venkappa Raju heard all this, because this was a new perspective, different people had given different solutions, so he thought maybe he should try this out. Now, Ghatikachalam is a hill near Sholingur in the Vellore district of Tamil Nadu, current Tamil Nadu Vellore district. In fact, there is Sri Yoga Narasimha Swami Temple. It is on the top of the hill. The hill is called Ghatikachala. In fact, there are two hills adjoining each other. On one hill, you have the shrine of Yoga Narasimha Swami Temple. And on the other hill, you have Yoga Anjaneyar. You have the Hanuman Temple. And in fact, this temple is considered as one of the 108 Divya Desams, sacred places of Vaishnava sect in Hinduism, incarnations of Lord Vishnu. Lord Narasimha is an avatar of Lord Vishnu. And it is said that after Lord Narasimha killed the demon Hiranyakashipu, Lord Narasimha was in a rage. You know, he was full of anger and he was red with fury after killing the demon. And at that point in time, Shiva came to Lord Narasimha and they say that to make Prahlada happy, Yoga Narasimha stayed there for one kadigai. Kadigai is a period of time. So Narasimha Swami stayed in that spot for one period of time. And because Yoga Narasimha was there stationed after he killed Hiranyakashipu, that place is considered very sacred. That is the place where the fearsome Narasimha Swami calmed down. And so P.T. Krishnamachari tells Pedda Venkaparaju that shrine is very powerful. If we can go there and we do some puja there, then there is some chance that this demon will free Satya and Satya will become normal. And Pedda Venkaparaju felt that this was really a very good idea. We need really a powerful god, because something is happening to Satya and we are not able to help him. Somebody has possessed him, and only a really, really fearful god can drive this ghost out of Satya. And so when he showed so much interest, P.T. Krishnamachari, then he started writing the directions for traveling there. And as he began doing that, suddenly little Satya just held his hand, just stopped him from doing that. And Krishnamachari was stunned. I mean, who is this little boy? How can he hold my hand and stop me from writing the directions? And absolutely surprised and taken aback when he looked at Satya, that's when Satya said, "Oh Krishnamachari Garu, oh Krishnamachari, this is so funny. What is the advice that you are giving? Who do you think is there in Ghatikachala temple? And you want these people to take me to me?" So Satya is telling to Krishnamachari, "You're so foolish. What is this nonsense advice you're giving these people that they should take me to Ghatikachala? Do you have any idea who is there in Ghatikachala? It is me only. How can they take me to me?" This is what the little Satya, 13, 14 year old Satya, is telling Krishnamachari Garu. And obviously the parents and everyone around, they were completely flummoxed, because they are not able to understand how can this boy speak like that. And Ishwaramma was really very anxious. She was distraught with worry. All the time she was filled with despair, because she was not able to understand this baffling nature of little Satya. Sometimes he would just start singing amazing poetry would just emerge from his lips. Sometimes he would just go into trance. Sometimes he would just become silent for hours. Sometimes he would have fits. Sometimes he would be absolutely uncontrollable. And sometimes he's steady as a rock. Sometimes he wants to eat. Sometimes for days he does not want to touch food. So these are moments which left everyone in Satya's family completely befuddled. Hardly anyone could see in these things a pattern of divine behavior, because it's understandable. They are not able to really fathom what is happening. All they want, like every parent would want, is to somehow stop all this. How to make this boy a normal boy? Why can't he just, like any other boy, eat well, get up early, eat well, go to the classes, come back and play and sleep and do the normal things? And it is in these moments of absolute anxiety day in and day out that Pedda Venkaparaju was completely at a loss, trying to figure out what he should do, how he should deal with this situation. And different people are saying different things. Every day one person comes and says that you should do this, this is not good, no, you should go there, no, you should call this exorcist, no, you should go to that doctor. So Pedda Venkaparaju was absolutely unable to find how to solve this such a naughty problem with his son. And one day, during these days, when Pedda Venkaparaju was coming back to his house, on the veranda of the grandfather's house, he saw that there are so many people crowding around Satya. And Pedda Venkaparaju also was very upset with Satya, because he felt that the way Satya had behaved with Krishnamachari Garu was not right. How can he interrupt him? How can he say to such a distinguished lawyer that who are you to give such advice? The advice that you're giving is wrong. I mean, who is he to correct such a respectful person? So all this had really disturbed Pedda Venkaparaju a lot. And when he saw that there is such a huge crowd around Satya and all these people are listening to what he's saying and they are so enamored by what he's doing, and he felt that all this thing is just going out of control. He felt, how could one little boy call himself Narasimha? How can he go on hoodwinking people like this? He felt, this is too much. And when he saw people crowding around him and they are in adoration of him and they are singing his praises and they're listening to him and the crowd is only becoming bigger, that's when he thought, I should just stop. This is too much. Enough's enough. He just could not take it anymore. So he parts that crowd and he forces himself into the center where Satya is, and he picks up a stick and he approaches Satya in all fury and he says, stop this stupid drama. Satya, you tell me, are you a ghost, a rogue or a madcap? Actually he tells, tell me, are you a ghost, a rogue or a madcap? Stop this stupid drama. Are you God? Are you Narasimha or Narayana? Because the father wanted one answer. That's it. He just wanted one solution to this vexing problem about his son. And it was only becoming complex day by day. All kinds of people were saying so many things, truths, half-truths, lies, deceptions, and he's just not able to deal every day with the new thing happening with Satya. And he just thought, I just need to close this chapter once and for all. So he picks that stick, tell me who you are. Are you a ghost? Are you a rogue? Are you a madcap? Are you God? I mean, how can you be God? Are you Narasimha? Are you Narayana? And it is at this moment, perhaps the moment that Satya was waiting, the moment to awaken the world towards his reality. And that is when, in a very gentle but determined voice, Satya says, I am Sai Baba. I am Sai Baba. For the first time, Pedda Venkappa Raju and all the people are hearing this word, Sai Baba. No one had heard about Sai Baba. The Shirdi Sai avatar had come and Baba had gone. And that happened in Maharashtra. This is a little village in Andhra Pradesh. A remote location. No one had any clue who this Sai Baba is. What is he saying? And so, when they heard something like this, absolutely unusual, and Pedda Venkappa Raju thought, this is not Satya, this is that ghost which is replying. This is that ghost which is telling that I am Sai Baba. And immediately Pedda Venkappa Raju angrily shouts back and he says, I don't care your Sai Baba or your Hai Baba. I have no business, you have no business to be in my son's body. You better leave this boy and leave this place once and for all. That is what he says. And little Satya is the same composure manner, in the same silent, in the same gentle, serene, but determined voice, once again, the same composure, Swami says, no, no. And then Bhagwan reveals, I am Sai Baba. I belong to Apastamba Sutra. I am of Bharadvaja Gotra. And he further adds, I have come because Venkavadhuta and other saints prayed for my coming. I shall bless you and remove all that troubles you. Worship me on every Guruvar, on every Thursday. Keep your minds and homes pure. If you just see these sentences, Bhagwan declares who he is. Bhagwan says why he has come. And then Bhagwan says what he will do for us. And then he also says what we should do. Everything is contained in this. I am Sai Baba. I belong to Apastamba Sutra. I am of the Bharadvaja Gotra. He is defined who he is. Then he says, I have come because Venkavadutta and other saints prayed for my coming. Why did I come? That is very clear. And then he says, what will I do with you? What is it? That is my mission. I shall bless you and remove all your troubles. And what should you do? Worship me on every Guruvar, on every Thursday. And most important, keep your minds and homes pure. Wow. Everything was explained in that historic moment on May 23rd, 1940. In fact, that afternoon, on May 23rd, Swami kept repeating Bharadvaja Gotra Apastamba Sutra, Bharadvaja Gotra Apastamba Sutra, Bharadvaja Gotra Apastamba Sutra, and no one understood why Satya was continuously repeating this. But the declaration was so powerful, so overwhelming, that Pedda Venkappa Raju just calmed down. He completely became a very subdued person. Because this is something which was absolutely stunning. these declarations were coming with so much force that it completely decapacitated you. And this happened on May 23rd, and I feel this is the reason why the month of May is so full of significance. So full of significance when we are contemplating on the Satya Sai Avatar. When you think about it, in April, Bhagwan left his physical form, April 24, 2011. But in May, Swami is declaring, who is Sai? So, if you think Swami left in April, if you think Bhagwan left, then Swami is telling, where did he really go? Can he go? Do you know who he is? And that comes in the next month, where Swami is telling who he is. Who is Sai Baba? In fact, two of my Radio Sai brothers, Arvind and Sai Prakash, did a beautiful video satsang on May 23rd, 2020, contemplating on this theme of who is Sai and alluding to the event which happened on May 23rd, 2020. You can watch this on our website and our YouTube channel. I am tempted to go back to the events of May 23rd, 2020 because I feel those words that we heard that Bhagwan revealed for the first time, those were words which perhaps we will hear once in a millennium, and they are so full of deep meaning. The Lord is announcing himself for the first time ever in the history of mankind in the Kali Yuga. I am Sai Baba. Sai Baba. What is the meaning of Sai Baba? So beautifully Swami has given. Sa means divine. I means mother. Baba means father. Sai Baba is divine mother and father. Sa means Sakala Aishwarya. Sa means the one who is all wisdom, all love, all power, all glory. Everything is contained in Sai. S-A-I, service, adoration, illumination, karma, bhakti, jnana, the path of wisdom, the path of action, the path of service, everything is contained in Sai Baba. Sai Baba is the summum bonum of spirituality. It is the essence of divinity in one sweet form. That is what is Sai Baba. And then Swami kept repeating, I belong to Apastamba Sutra and I am of Bharadwaja Gotra. What is Apastamba Sutra? Apastamba Dharma Sutras are Sanskrit texts. This Apastamba Dharma Sutra is one of the oldest dharma-related texts of Hinduism that has survived into the modern age from the first millennium, from first BC. It's one of the oldest texts on the principle of dharma. It is one of the three extant Dharma Sutras from the Taittiriya school of Krishna Yajurveda. There is also Bodhyayana Dharma Sutra and Hiranyakesan Dharma Sutra. All are from the Krishna Yajurveda. The Gautama Dharma Sutra is part of Apastamba Kalpa Sutra. And it is one of the best preserved ancient texts on dharma. God comes down for dharma sthapana, isn't it? Krishna has told, I come down age after age for the restoration of right conduct, righteousness. And you see, Bhagwan says that I belong to Apastam. I belong to that ancient text which has codified principles of right conduct, In fact, they say this Apastamba Dharma Sutra is notable for its broad-minded and liberal views on women and all social classes. It is also notable for mentioning and citing views of 10 ancient experts on Dharma, which has led scholars to conclude that there existed a rich genre of Dharma Sutra's text in ancient India before this text was composed. Because of this text, people concluded that there existed really a treasure trove of Dharma Sutras in ancient India. So powerful is this treatise on Dharma. And it is attributed to Apastamba, the sage Apastamba, the founder of a stream of Yajurveda. And according to Hindu tradition, Apastamba was a student of Bodhyayana, and the student of Apastamba was Hiranyakeshin, and each of the three founded a Vedic school, and each of their schools produced a collection of literature within the Krishna Yajurveda tradition. So they were the founders of these ancient traditions which has come down since thousands of years. In fact, it is considered as a very broad-minded and liberal text. Aspects of Dharma not taught in Dharma Shastras can be learned from women and people of all classes. This is what Apastamba Sutra, one of the verses, states, that we can learn from women, we can learn from people of all classes. Apastamba Dharma Sutra recognizes property rights of women and her ability to inherit wealth from her parents. We are talking about all these codes of conduct that has been laid down 1 BC or before. So Apastamba Sutras have contained all the knowledge about ideal Dharma. And Apastamba Sutras also believe that parts of Veda have been lost. Human customs developed from the original complete Vedas, but we lost some of the Vedas. And it is for this reason that one must see the customs of good people as a source to infer what was the original Vedas. So there is this lost Veda theory, wherein they say that the study of customs of good people also is a source of Dharma, and that is a guide to proper living. So Bhagwan attributed his advent and his lineage to Apastamba Sutra. So Bhagwan was saying that he has come to bring back all these sacred tenets of Dharma that was so beautifully codified by sage Apastamba. He is giving credit, bringing back to our consciousness the principles of right conduct that was so amazingly documented by Apastamba, and which is there as part of Yajurveda. And Swami is telling, I belong to that tradition, I belong to that ancient dharmic tradition. When I take a human form, this is where I belong. I belong to this dharma. And that is what every act of Bhagwan was, as per the scriptural tenet of right conduct. And then Swami says, I am a Bharadwaja Gotra. My lineage is, I am part of the series of saints and beautiful souls that are part of the Bharadwaja lineage. And we know how Bhagwan revealed that story about Shiva and Shakti granting Bharadwaja the boon that they will be born in his lineage. And that is how we have the three incarnations of Shirdi Sai, Satya Sai, and Prema Sai. So That afternoon, Swami, for the first time when he revealed that I belong to Apastamba Sutra and Bharadwaja Gotra, so Swami was saying how he has come to restore righteousness and how he was there because he gave that promise to that sacred soul, Bharadwaja, who went to Kailasa and who did penance for him and who had spent so many years trying to codify the Vedas. Bharadwaja and Apastamba, they are those giants who have done so much for the welfare of mankind in trying to codify, document and pass on to generations the sacred principles and precepts that are needed for our harmonious living. And Swami is attributing his human form to these sacred souls. And then Bhagwan says, I have come because Venkavadhuta and other saints prayed for my coming. I shall bless you and remove all that troubles you. So after defining the lineage of the present incarnation, why he chose this particular house, this particular family to be born, Swami gives further explanation and says, see, I came because your family ancestor prayed, Venkavadhuta and other saints prayed for my coming, Swami said. In fact, Kundamaraju Garu, the grandfather of Vilsatya, often referred to Venkavadhuta in his conversations. Venkavadhuta was believed to have come to Andhra Pradesh from Maharashtra. One afternoon under a banyan tree, he is said to have communed with Kundamaraju Garu and he had revealed, saying that the earth is in deep distress, Narayana himself would come. This is what he had revealed to his son Peddavenkaparaju. And whenever Kundamaraju described Venkavadhuta, the ancient saint of their family, he would say words which were absolutely ethereal whenever he described Venkavadhuta. He would say, no face could ever be gloomy in his presence, for he was always smiling and jovial. No door ever closed as he passed by, because everyone invited him in. People everywhere claimed him as their kinsman, but he himself refused to accept any relationship or ties with anyone. I mean, when you read about the attributes of Venkavadhuta, it is the attributes of a self-realized soul. Kundamaraju goes on, he was hungry only when another in his presence was hungry. He wore clothes only when they were wound around him. He carried his body as if it were a dress put on him. He had no attachment to the dress that he was wearing. So the rain washed it and the sun dried it and sleep visited it occasionally and left whenever it was unwelcome. It was absolutely someone who was like the lotus on the water but completely untouched by the water. That is how Venkavadhuta was. When he looked, his eyes shone bright. When he spoke, his voice was steady and soothing. When he placed his hand on the head of someone, that touch was a prelude to paradise. His very touch made you feel heavenly. And Kundamaraju goes on, he was like a breeze, a cloud, a bird on flight from earth to heaven. No one knew anything about him. None could guess where he came from and to where indeed he went. He was here, there, anywhere, everywhere, for more years than anyone could calculate or guess. I mean, that is the mystical nature, mystical personality of Venkavadhuta, the ancestor. of Bhagwan's family. And Swami says it's because Venkavadhuta prayed that I decided to come. In fact, legend has it that Venkavadhuta went into Jiva Samadhi, eternal communion with the divine, about 300 years ago. And this took place in the village Chaudeshwaripura. However, since 1846, this place is known as Husainpura because of the nomenclature change that was instituted by the then Nawab of Hyderabad. Currently, it is in the Pavagada Taluk of the state of Karnataka, which is a few kilometers from the border of Andhra Pradesh. In fact, the story also goes that one day the bullocks of Mukarulu, a peasant, fell into a well, and many people tried to rescue the animal, but they were unable to do anything. And Venkavadhuta was then passing by, and he looked at the chaos there, and he said, "Why are you all struggling so much? No need to pull them. Don't worry, that bullock which has fallen down, it will just come out on its own." And the next second, he just called out to these bullocks. And the bullocks, they just came up the well walking. As if they are walking on the ground, they just walked and came up against gravity. And the villagers were so flabbergasted seeing this divine person who could do such miracles. They realized he is not an ordinary man. So they requested him not to leave their village. And that grateful farmer offered a hut to the revered saint. And in that space, which served as the saint's residence for many years, today there is a historic temple. A temple dedicated to Venkavadhuta. In fact, there is another tale of how after his samadhi, a few Muslims complained to the Nawab of Hyderabad that the Avadhuta's body was buried in the middle of the village. Apparently, what was then a little hut, now it has become middle of the village. And so the Nawab said, "Okay, fine, we'll remove that tomb." And a soldier was assigned the task of uncovering the tomb. And when the soldier did this, he was left completely bedazzled, befuddled, because all the puja material that were laid out when the Venkavadhuta was buried, everything was intact. In fact, even the lamps were still burning brightly and steadily. So the soldier was horrified and humbled, and he instantly closed the tomb, and he also became a devotee. And that is how not only him, the entire community there, once and for all, they surrendered to the sacredness of that shrine. And in fact, since then, many, including that soldier, they have contributed generously towards the development of that temple. And the people of that area, even now, they confide how on several occasions they have spotted many saintly personages come and disappear from that holy enclosure. So Swami is telling it is because of the intense devotion of Venkavadhuta that the Lord came. And in fact, it was because of Venkavadhuta that Kundamaraju named his sons as Venkam, Venkaparaju, Chinna Venkaparaju and Pedda Venkaparaju. And both of them inherited not only their father's musical, literary and dramatic virtuosity, but also that piety and that simplicity, that purity, all came from Venkavadhuta's lineage. So the avatar comes only to fill our starved hearts with love. When the good and the godly pray, God arrives, because they undoubtedly seek the larger good of the world. And when these people pray, God will go to any length to satisfy them. He comes because they ask for his coming. If these people had asked for only destruction of evil or protection from a particular calamity or the granting of a certain boon, the omnipotent Lord could have done that for them in a million ways without having to assume an earthly vesture. But when the devotees miss him, when the devotees long for him, that is when the Lord comes down in a mesmerizing form. And that is what happened with the Sri Satya Sai Avatar, when the pangs of separation from him grew into an unbearable pain and emptiness in the hearts of many. That is when the Lord decided to manifest from within, and manifest most magnificently, melting all the sorrows in an instant into unspeakable ecstasy. So that is what Swami says, I came because your Venkavaduta prayed. And then finally, what did Swami say? Worship me. What should you do? Worship me on every Guruvar. Keep your minds and hearts pure. Worship me on every Thursday. In 1983, when the Dasara celebrations was fast approaching and a few students had been selected to deliver talks during the Prashanti Vidwan Mahasabha, which used to be held every evening during the Dasara celebrations. So Bhagwan had called to his presence many students who were about to speak. To one student, Swami asked, what is the topic of your talk? So this brother said, Swami, I would like to speak on Sai, our Sadguru. So Swami said, okay, who is a guru? So this brother immediately did not answer Swami's question. He just kept quiet. And then Swami himself explained, Gu stands for the darkness of ignorance. Ru is the one who removes it. Guru is one who removes the darkness of ignorance, Swami said. Bhagwan then asked again, okay, who is a Sadguru? So this boy said, Swami, Sadguru is one who takes the individual beyond the ocean of samsara, beyond the cycle of birth and death. And Swami seemed to be happy with the answer. But Swami added, Swami said, Sai is not the Guru or Sadguru. Sai is not Guru or Sadguru. Swami said, Sai is Jagat Guru. He is not just a teacher of truth. He is not just a teacher. He is the teacher of the world. Sai is not merely Vyaktinath, he is not Lord of people, but he is Loknath, he is Lord of the world. So, Swami is telling on May 23rd, 1940, worship me on every Thursday because he is the Jagat Guru. In our weekly calendar, Guruvar is the day meant for the Guru. And Swami is telling, worship me on that day because I am the teacher of the whole world. And how should you do it? Keep your minds and your homes pure. As Swami says, purity is the essence of all sadhana. In fact, everything that Bhagwan has given us in the form of his discourses or vahinis, if you see the essence of it, Swami is only telling how we can become more and more and more pure. Because only when you become pure, only when you are redolent with purity, then you will be able to see divinity. You will be able to see the unity of creation and experience divinity in its every atom. And this is what Bhagwan so beautifully revealed. Everything that has to be conveyed, Swami has done it in that declaration on May 23rd. And Swami said, I have come to remove all your troubles and bless you. And that is what Bhagwan has been doing for us. I have come to remove all your troubles, financial, be it health troubles, be it social troubles, be it family troubles, be it anything, we can go to Swami. And that's what Swami said, I have come to remove all your troubles and I have come to bless you. I have come so that your life becomes easy, so that you are not in sorrow anymore, so that you learn to tap happiness. That is what everything that Bhagwan wanted to reveal about himself, his work, his mission, and what we have to do is all there on May 23rd, 1940. It is really Bhagwan's grace that on every Thursday we have this Thursday live session. Thursday is the day when we should contemplate on the Jagat Guru, on that supreme preceptor. And by his grace we have been doing this week after week, ruminating, remembering, recollecting and relishing the glory, beauty and the power of his life, his teachings and his manifestations in outside, inside, deep inside, in this program that happens on the morning of every Thursday. We want to start this series, Satyam Shivam Sundaram. And as is evident from the name, it is focused on the life and the beautiful unfolding of the Satya Sai Saga. And I narrated and went back to May 23rd because I felt this is such a powerful month. And in this month, we want to start this series, Satyam Shivam Sundaram, on Radio Sai. In fact, you have already heard the story of Satya in our segment Afternoon Satsang, where Brothers Prem and Arvind have in detail covered Bhagwan's life from 1926 to 1950. And in outside, inside, deep inside, now we will take Bhagwan's life after 1950, because there is so much that has happened and that we can drink the nectar from. And we are going to contemplate on the events that unfolded after Prashanthi Nilayam came into being on November 23rd, 1950. Prashanthi Nilayam got inaugurated, the basic Prashanthi Nilayam, the first look of Prashanthi Nilayam. And after that, so many beautiful things unfolded and the ashram began blossoming into the spiritual center of entire humanity. And the base document for Bhagwan's life, of course, is Professor Kasturi's Satyam Shivam Sundaram. The first four volumes of Satyam Shivam Sundaram were written by Professor Kasturi himself and were blessed by Bhagwan. In fact, the first volume of Satyam Shivam Sundaram was released on November 23rd, 1961, Bhagwan's 36th birthday. And Professor Kasturi, in the very first introduction of Satyam Shivam Sundaram, he goes back down the memory lane to his first visit to Puttaparthi and to the state of recognizing Bhagwan, knowing his power, knowing his glory. And that is when he talks about how he was born in an obscure village in North Travancore when the 19th century had still 3 years and a few days to run in 1897, and he had schooling in Cochin under a great headmaster who had met Swami Vivekananda and who lit in his little heart that flame of prayer and devotion. And then he did his college in Trivandrum, and then he did his master's MA and BL. Then he got a job as a lecturer in history at a college in Mysore. And so one day he was on a country boat. He and his wife and his mother, they were journeying along the canals and the backwaters of the west coast on the first lap of their trip to catch the train at Ernakulam. And it was the middle of the night in the dark backwaters, and there was a coast guard who called out in the night saying, "Where are you guys going?" And the boatman had a very fine sense of humor, and the boatman said, "We are going to Mysore." I mean, Mysore is inland, so you cannot be going in a boat to Mysore. But you know, the boatman, with the tongue in his cheek, he said, "We are going to Mysore." And the coast guard also was not less. He was even in a more humorous mood. He said, "Okay, why do you say that you're going to Mysore? Don't you know a place beyond Mysore?" And Professor Kasturi says, little did we know then that there was a place beyond Mysore, a couple of 100 miles to the north of that city, a place called Puttaparthi, which was to provide us harborage from the turbulent storms of earthly existence. There I found the teacher that I wanted. And he says, Yogi Sudhananda Bharati, the famous mystic poet of Tamil Nadu, said in April 1959, when addressing a religious conference at Venkatagiri, over which Bhagwan presided, he said, "I have practiced yoga for over 50 years. I once observed the vow of silence continuously for over 20 years. I have come in contact with Shirdi Baba, with Ramana Maharshi, with Aurobindo, with Meher Baba, and so many. And it is because of the result of all this discipline that I have done, yoga for 50 years, 20 years of silence, and meeting so many saints and holy men, that finally I have met Sri Satya Sai Baba." That is what Yogi Sudhananda Bharati, the famous poet of Tamil Nadu, saint poet of Tamil Nadu, had said. Reflecting on this, Professor Kasturi says, in the introduction of the first volume of Satyam Shivam Sundaram, he says, "I served as the secretary of the Ramakrishna Mission at Mysore for over 17 years. I came in contact with Sri Siddharuda Swami, Sri Ramana Maharshi, Sri Meher Baba, and Sri Narayan Guru. I was initiated into Japam by Mahapurushji, the direct disciple of Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa. I was the president of the Ramakrishna Mission. And now, I am convinced it is because of the result of all this that I have done till now that I am at the feet of Sri Satya Sai Baba. 1948, I came to him only because I had done this sadhana for so many years, serving in Ramakrishna Mission, doing japa for years together, meeting the direct disciple of Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa, and so on." And that is what Professor Kasturi says, that "I have had the good fortune of mingling with many of Swami's devotees who have had longer and closer associations with him. I have availed myself of every opportunity of witnessing events illustrating his divine power, and I have had the chance to listen to his powerful discourses." And then he says, "I trust this book, this first book, Satyam Shivam Sundaram, Volume 1, will reveal to the reader some of the reasons for the extraordinarily intimate loyalty that binds me and so many devotees to Baba. Baba is an open book with no mystery, no pomp, no obtuseness about him. Everyone can approach him and secure his grace. And then he concludes by saying, "I have great sympathy for those who are unaware of Baba's stature, because I too demurred, I also doubted, I also disbelieved Baba with all the sarcasm and satire found in the novels, dramas and essays which I only wrote before. In my stupid pride, I did not make any effort to meet him earlier. But now I know." And then he says, "Now I invite everyone to come and share his grace, his majesty, his mercy, and stand witness to the divine power that Baba personifies." So this is how Professor Kasturi begins Satyam Shivam Sundaram, Volume 1. And so in this segment, in Outside Inside, Deep Inside, in the coming episodes, we will go back to this beautiful text. And in the next episode, I will share with you how the name Satyam Shivam Sundaram came, how Bhagwan so beautifully directed Professor Kasturi to have the book named as Satyam Shivam Sundaram. And then, as I said, we'll go on to the events that unfolded in Bhagwan's life from 1950 onwards. Dear listeners, thank you so much. It's really a joy for me to offer this service, this program, to all of you, to the Swami in all of you. I pray to Bhagwan that He gives us that strength and that knowledge and that wisdom to contemplate on His life and share His love. If you have any queries, as always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. I'm Team Radio Sai Bishu. You can also send us your comments on our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Thank you so much for being with me, with us, through this satsang. Sai Ram.